Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Bonjour, Anim.
Danach a ak anzeni shuk with an.
Tante.
Hey, inuradike.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Hi, I'm Christine Genier. Welcome to Words and Culture, the Athabaskan episodes. Athabaskan is the name used by anthropologists and linguists to describe the Dene, Diné, or Dena languages in North America. In the Yukon, 7 of the 8 indigenous languages are categorized as Athabaskan. They are separate and unique languages. In the way we speak, however, there are similarities and even shared words. The names we have for animals, for instance, are similar, if not the same, in our languages, such as our word ga for rabbit. In this way, we are all related, and within those relations, we see family and community, which extend beyond colonizing borders. There exist nations which have been on this land since time immemorial, before the establishment of the countries called Canada and the United States. The border between Canada and the U.S., between Alaska and the Yukon, falls smack on the land of the White River First Nation. Their home includes the border town of Beaver Creek, Canada's westernmost community. The ancestral languages spoken in White River First Nation are Northern Tshone and Upper Tanana. Jolinda Benjamin is a teacher, a mother, and a keeper of the Upper Tanana language who lives in Beaver Creek with her family. In these conversations, I've asked those I'm speaking with to introduce themselves. How we are taught in our way, Dunke, we have a lot of information in how we introduce ourselves. It lets folks know where we come from and who we come from. And it will sound different depending on where you're from and what your history is. I asked my friend Jolinda Benjamin to introduce herself.
Jolinda Benjamin Shna Jackie Johnny Mosi, Shtat Patrick Johnny Mosi, Shna Una Glenda Ewan Mosi, Shna Utat Roy Ewan Mosi, Shtat Una Sicily Johnny Mosi, Shtat Utat White River Johnny or Little John Mosi.
Where are you from?
Well, I consider myself from here, but I was also born in Anchorage, and then I was raised in Gulkana, Alaska, until I was about 9 years old. My dad is from here, my mom is from Alaska, and they decided to move us here in Beaver Creek.
I was chatting with someone else about Gwich'in language and talked about how that big border came down between our people, and decided to split up communities and families without really giving it a whole lot of thought. That happened here in White River First Nation, didn't it?
Yeah.
What kind of impact does that have on language?
There was always, like, different dialects. We have a different dialect here and then a different dialect in Northway, but I had heard stories that North Waite and Scotty Creek were all one village one time. But then when the border came through, they had told them, either you go on this side or on this side. And then so my family stayed on this side of the border. And then a lot of them moved to the North Waite area, Nabianing, which they call that village now. And also, like, the impacts of potlatch. Usually we give guns and stuff. Some of our families would go to North Bay and get buried over there. Like, I have my grandma and grandpa buried over there, a couple of uncles. My dad did not want to get buried over there when he had passed. And he wanted to have his potlatch here in Beaver Creek. And then that's what we did. But we weren't allowed to give away guns like how we would normally, because of, like, the gun restriction laws here. And we figured out a way of just giving money, but, like, that's a big impact, I guess.
The potlatch is a gathering, a feast which is held for any number of reasons. Some examples are marriage, birth, exchange of land, redistribution of wealth, and in death. They can and often do last for days, and people come from all over. Where one comes from will determine what the potlatch looks like. As part of the policies of forced assimilation put on Indigenous people, the potlatch was made illegal from 1885 to 1951. There are two languages held in White River First Nation, Upper Tanana and Northern Tashoni. I asked Jolinda if she grew up speaking the language.
No. When I grew up in Alaska, I heard, like, my grandma talking with, like, my other grandmas and stuff, like, but always talking English to me. And then on my dad's side of the family, which is Upper Tanana, I would, like, be around my aunties and people we would visit, and they would all talk in the language, but, like, nothing to me. But, like, I was always just around me, I guess, growing up. And then when I came here, I started learning Northern Tashoni language, actually, when I first got here. And then, but then the teacher retired, and then, but yeah, that's the start of my language journey a little bit, growing up.
Yep. At some point, you decided to start teaching.
Yeah.
When did that land on you?
So I was 24. My auntie, Ruth Johnny, she would always be like, come teach with me. Like, I need somebody to be there so I could retire. And then I'd be like, I don't know. I don't even know anything in the language. And then she'd be like, you don't have to, I'll teach you. And then I was like, we'll see. And then I just remember one day, like, tired of living my life the way I was living my life. And then I was thinking, maybe this will help me, like, you know, go on a different path. And then so I said, reached out to Ruth and said, I'm ready to come and learn and teach the language with you. And then she said, okay, I'll set everything up. And then a month later, I was in the classroom.
And did it inform how you were living your life?
Yeah, I felt like it helped, but I was still struggling with, like, addiction to alcohol. But, yeah, it was just getting to the point of where I wouldn't show up to work or something. And then I was tired of doing that. So then I decided to go to treatment in the summer of 2017, 3 years after I started teaching.
What's that like to work in a public school teaching language?
I feel like it's good. For a long time, I haven't really felt supported. I mean, I have felt supported by the principals in our school, but during the time, maybe not once, but I feel like since last week when I went to First Nations School Board's PD day or something, they were asking us how they could help, like, emotionally, physically, spiritually, and mentally. And then that was the first time I felt like I was heard, I guess, and I feel supported from the higher ups more.
You feel like there's been a real shift in the last few years?
Yeah. Well, even before the First Nations School Board was in there, we had a principal come here who already wanted to have this changed mindset, I guess, of teaching the kids. You know, she teaches them with, like, play-based, and it's really pretty cool to see. She even teaches them, like, window of tolerance and, like, emotional regulation, and it's, like, I was never taught that growing up, like, you know, so it's nice to see my own son and then for me to even learn.
Yeah.
And then these kids are pretty lucky here. And we've been in our own bubble here for a long time, and now people are starting to see how the school is here, and people are talking all over the Yukon about how the school runs.
Did you find that working in language with your relations rather than, you know, how we're expected to learn things these days, go into a big building and a big institution. Did you find that learning language and learning how to teach language from your older relations helped to deepen those relationships, to strengthen those relationships? Did it impact it like that?
Yeah, I really felt that because, you know, me and my dad, we were always close, but, like, when I started learning with him, it felt like we got even more closer, and then he was coming out of his shell even more. It looked like it was like healing for him as well, since he was a residential school survivor. He was just flowing out language, and when normally he would just talk English all the time to me, and then he started talking to me in the language, and it was pretty cool to see. My Auntie Ruth really helped me, and it definitely strengthened my relationship with her. We got really close. We were teaching together for about, I don't even know, like 7 years or something. And then my Auntie Jenny lives in Alaska, and we are closer than ever, too. Yeah, I feel like it has strengthened all of their relationships. Those are my three main mentors right there.
What do you see as some of the successes, some of the bright spots of this work that we do?
I feel like healing. There's some members in our community who have a hard time speaking in public, or just speaking in general, I guess. And then I've seen some members in our community all of a sudden are starting to come out of their shells more with the language work, and they are speaking more in the language. Like, to me, I feel like they don't feel ashamed or embarrassed to speak anymore, which is nice to see.
You have a young family, too. You're going to have the opportunity, it seems, to teach from birth.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of impact do you think that's going to have? What kind of changes on how we work in language do you think it'll bring to be able to teach our babies from birth in a way that we haven't been able to for a couple of generations?
Well, I feel like it will help, and it has helped. Like, I would tell them body parts or hunte is then, which means hurry up.
Yeah.
Just like basic commands mostly. But,
do you find that a lot of us who come in, I guess they call us silent speakers, the ones who came from people who were speaking and maybe we weren't understanding it when we were young, but there are words I find not in duck, come mm-hmm. here, the commands here, yeah. take this, in duck, come here, that we're all coming into it. There was always a little bit hanging yeah. around and we understood by the tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically I'm doing that with my children. I would like to speak in immersion at home, but it's kind of hard with my husband. He's a Gwich'in. He's Gwich'in, like, he's not a speaker, but he's from Old Crow Yukon, and then, like, I'm from here, and then we just talk English to each other.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a barrier there, too.
When I tell you a story, but I do it to my son, too. A long time ago, because he's older now, he's an adult, but I was in the house and he was upstairs. We had to leave. We had to leave the house and, you know, I was waiting for him like you do with young people. And finally I bellowed at him. I said, hey, Inda. And he didn't come downstairs. I said, Joe, Inda. And I heard from upstairs, Mom, I'm Indaing as fast as I can. That story, I always think about that. It made me laugh so hard. But how we do, we keep these precious little gems, you know. I don't know about anyone else. I didn't know how much was missing until I started filling it up in myself. I know for me, I tried to fill it up with things that weren't language. Alcohol was one of them for a while.
Yeah.
And then when I stopped waiting for permissions from the outside world and started really bugging my mom about it, and I think some of us had to bug our parents, and we'll get into those reasons maybe in another conversation. I think anyone who's been paying attention in this country knows what happened, and I don't want us to have to talk about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I did have to bug Mom for a little bit, but then when that started happening, I could feel myself filling up. And when I look back on those being young and using those words that we did know that were given to us, how it felt like I was carrying little diamonds already. Little gems, little pieces of very valuable, I don't know, not objects, but a very valuable gift, maybe, that I didn't do it that way on purpose. I didn't think, oh, I got to do something different, so I'm going to do language. I started doing language, and then it realized that that's what I was looking for. That was one of the big gaps that I was looking to fill.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many people, do you know how many people approximately speak Upper Tanana?
I'm not sure altogether, but I know of, like, in this dialect that we speak here, there must be maybe about 2 speakers left.
That's scary.
That's scary.
Is there a lot of cross-border work that happens?
Not really, but I really want to do something like that. I was thinking of, like, having some kind of Upper Tanana language gathering, like, because I want to know which other speakers are out there and if they want to help. Like, my Auntie Jenny lives over there, who is from here, but she was saying someone over there wants to help with the language, and I thought that was just awesome.
So we have connections between our communities. You have connections with your people on the other side of the border because that's how we are. Do you think, you don't have to answer this, this might be a heavy question. Do you think that what they call the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Alaska is having conversations with the, oh, what are they called now, Crown Indigenous Relations and Northern Affairs Canada, which is what we call now, what used to be called DIA, Department of Indian Affairs, right? Do you think they're talking about how they can help with these issues?
In Alaska? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's completely different over there. There are some people working on the language. I've seen at UAF. And I know that they had started a mentor apprentice over there, which is nice. I mean, let's start. They're so behind over there in their language revitalization. And it's very scary. Like, it's to the point where even I want to go back to where my mom is from and help them revitalize their language, because it's all there. It's all not really. Yeah, they do have some culture relevant stuff, but it's mostly all Christian based, I guess. It's very religious communities down there, and I don't believe in that, so.
We do get a bit more support than they do in the United States for language revitalization, and I guess that's why I asked about, you know, the Bureau over there interacting with CERNAC over here. And we do require that support. The governing bodies are responsible for us being in the situation, so they can help to pay to get us out in a lot of ways. And I would look forward to seeing that happen in the United States. I find every time I cross the border back into what we call Canada now, you can see the difference just even in the signage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can see it here because, I mean, we could walk for 5 minutes and we'd be in Alaska from where we're sitting right now. Or walk fast. But so you can see so clearly, it's a tangible thing of the stark differences there. Where do you see us 50 years from now?
Well, I have a little hope because there was a lot of recordings done, a lot of writing. I know writing is, some people don't like the writing, but for me, as a person who really likes grammar, I could read the language and everything, so that really helps for me. And I feel like more people are going to be speaking. Like, you could already see it, more people speaking. Even when I go to Whitehorse, it's really nice.
Can you teach me just one little thing in Northern Toshone?
Upper Tana.
Upper Tana. It's because I'm coming to you from a Southern Toshone brain. Like, everyone's Toshone.
It's okay. Well, half of our community is from Toshone.
Can you teach me something in Upper Tana?
Yeah. Maybe thank you. Sini.
Sini?
Yeah.
Sini.
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 Yeah. Or if you want to say thank you very much or big thank you, Sini Cho.
Sini Cho. See, we do have similarities. We've got Cho too. Are you sure it's not Northern Toshone?
We're related to Southern Toshone and Northern Toshone, actually, in Burwash, and then Snake.
All related. Show it ish, Yendi. That was my conversation with Jolinda Benjamin. I got to sit down with Jolinda in her hometown of Beaver Creek to talk about the Upper Tanana language. Jolinda is a virtual dictionary of Upper Tanana, having dropped in much of the vocabulary. Her passion for language transfer drives her work with her students and informs her interactions with her family. I always really enjoy my conversations with Jolinda Shroni Thun. Jeremy Parkin is half of a Whitehorse musical duo called Local Boy. His solo work is a soundscape of the North and a beautiful lens into some of the inspiration that one can get living north of the 60th parallel. This is Jeremy Parkin with I Feel Quiet. And with I Feel Quiet, I feel like going over the words that Jolinda taught me in Upper Tanana. She said to say thank you very much, Tsuni Sho. I think I put some of my own dialect in there. Tsuni Cho. Tsuni Cho. So thank